Hello, and welcome to the Legal Marketing 2.0 podcast. I am your host, Guy Alvarez from Good to Be Social. And today we're going to talk about how to start and succeed at creating your own law firm podcast. Our guest today is Alan Kiplinski. Alan is a senior counsel at Ballard Spahr and the chair of the Consumer Financial Services Group at the firm. He is the recipient of the Lifetime Achievement Award of the American College of Consumer Financial Services Law. He has been consistently ranked as a Tier 1 lawyer by Chambers USA in the area of consumer financial services, regulation, litigation, and government enforcement. And Alan launched his blog, Consumer Finance Monitor, in 2011, and his podcast, which goes by the same name, in 2008. Welcome to the show, Alan.
Well, thank you, Guy. Pleasure to be here today.
Pleasure to have you here. So, Alan, before we get started, tell us a little bit more about yourself. Like, how did you decide to go from just practicing law to then launching a podcast and a blog?
Yeah, sure, Guy. I had a very successful niche practice at our firm, Ballard Spahr, and prior to that, I was at another law firm for many years. And then in 2010, lightning struck in that Congress enacted the Dodd-Frank Act. They created the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, or I'll refer to it as the CFPB. And that was a complete game changer for all of our clients, for the banking industry, the consumer finance industry, and it was a game changer for our practice group at the firm, because I felt that this was going to be a really good time, a propitious time to get into podcasting. Well, initially a blog in 2011. We were the first blog at our law firm. And at that time, it was a very controversial thing. The chairman of our firm at that time thought it was unseemly for a large law firm to have a blog. But fortunately, myself and the then marketing director convinced him that it was worth giving it a try. So that's how we launched our blog. It was called CFPB Monitor, and got launched on the very same day that the CFPB itself became operational. And we've been doing it for 11 years. We're very fortunate to have a person, a very experienced consumer financial services lawyer who manages the blog, who monitors developments in the area. And she very often writes blogs for the very busy lawyers in our group who don't have the time to do it. Not too many law firms have that luxury, so we're very fortunate.
That's great. And so you had the blog for a while, and then why did you decide to launch a podcast?
Well, this is very interesting, and this is a generational thing, I guess you could say, Guy. So one day, I'm out to dinner with my son, not a lawyer, but he's involved in the New York Times electronic edition. He's a business person, has an MBA. And he asked me, what are you doing in the area of social media? So I told him, well, we do a lot of webinars, and we have our blog, and it's been very successful with thousands and thousands of subscribers. And I said, well, what else should we be doing? And he said to me, you don't have a podcast, Dad? I mean, come on, you know, who do you want to appeal to? Are you appealing just to your contemporaries, or do you want to appeal to Generation X and the millennials? And I said, I want to appeal to everybody. That was the conversation that then led to us, myself and our marketing team, looking into podcasting, and we explored it. And then in September of 2018, we decided to launch the podcast. And we've been doing it on a weekly basis ever since then, Guy.
That's fantastic. Good for you. And tell me, what did you find to be the most challenging aspect when you first launched the podcast?
There was never a problem coming up with topics. Let me answer your question a little bit backwards, the things that were easy, because there was so much going on in our area of law, and the CFPB was constantly driving our clients crazy, you know, issuing all kinds of regulations, supervising them, bringing enforcement actions. There were things happening all the time. And it wasn't that hard for me to get guests for our show. I want to tell you a little bit later, but before we finish, something that really supercharged my effort to get guests. The hardest thing was to convince the younger lawyers within our group that they ought to get involved. I wanted to get the younger lawyers involved. Some of them had already been doing webinars, and I wanted them to get involved in podcasting. And I felt like sometimes it was pulling teeth to try to get them as excited about podcasting as I was. They were nervous about it. I guess if you haven't done it before, you don't know exactly what it is. And I had to convince them it's much easier than doing a webinar. You don't need slides. You have a conversation with me. I have ended up hosting most of the podcasts, and you know, it's intended to be conversational, and it's not nearly as formal. And it took a while until they realized that it wasn't that difficult. And in addition to that, it was actually fun. Some of them, after they did it, you know, told me, gee, I don't know what I've been missing for so long. It was really good.
That's great. It's kind of interesting, right, Alan? You would think the younger lawyers would be much more adept and interested in trying some of these newer digital social techniques. But I have also found in working with law firms that a lot of times it's the younger lawyers who are less interested in doing things on social media or trying out new things. And it sounds like you've had the same experience.
It's the same experience. I think it's attributable to a couple of things, Scott. I think number one, at least in our firm, you don't get billable hours credit for doing a business development. That's expected to be on top of whatever billable hours responsibilities you have for dealing with client matters. So I think it's that and the fact that they're very busy. It's not like they have a lot of extra time to devote to preparing for a webinar or a podcast or even to write a blog. And we do have several of them, you know, who do get involved in writing blogs. But it's been difficult. And I think law firms have to create more incentives for the younger lawyers so that they will, you know, be more inclined to do not just podcasting and webinars and go on social media, but to do business development in general.
Yeah, absolutely. And as they say, they don't teach you business development in law school. So it's sort of a skill you got to learn on your own, right?
You know, I got fortunate in that I had a mentor when I was very young, the very early part of my career, who really taught me, you know, how to get out there and how to develop business.
Fantastic. So going back to your podcast, who is your target audience?
Yeah, so our target audience, Guy, is mostly in-house counsel at banks and other non-banks that are involved in consumer financial services. And by consumer financial services, I'm talking about credit card issuers, mortgage lenders and servicers, student loan lenders and servicers, retailers who offer credit, debt collection agencies, payment processors. I could go on and on. As long as consumer finance is involved, those are the people we want on our podcast. The main target audience is in-house counsel. But interestingly enough, we have a number of media who regularly listen to our podcast. you know, media from places like periodicals like the American Banker, which is something that's read by a lot of our clients. So very often the media will attend one of our podcasts and they'll write an article about it. Or something that is said during the podcast gets them interested and they'll want to follow up with me or with whatever guest I might have on the program. Our podcast is an open podcast. That is, we don't exclude anyone. So I'm sure that a number of our competitors are listening to our podcast as well. And there's nothing we can do to avoid that.
Yeah, I have the same issue.
The other thing, there's one other thing that's interesting. The regulators listen to our podcast. We have a number of folks from the CFPB, the Comptroller of the Currency, the FDIC, State Attorneys General. Many, many of them listen to our podcast. So, you know, we don't give away any trade secrets, Guy. We know that it's a wide audience and we're not just talking to our clients or to industry people.
That makes perfect sense. Now, you mentioned that one of the easiest things for you to do is to, you know, come up with topics. Obviously, a lot going on in your area of practice. Tell us a little bit about, you know, how do you go about selecting topics? Do you have some sort of editorial calendar where you plan on a week-to-week basis what you're going to be talking about? And then how do you select your guests? How do you figure out who you want to have on the podcast? And how do you go about, you know, not just selecting them, but, you know, getting them to come on the show?
Yeah, sure. Well, in terms of podcasts and topics I'm talking about, that isn't so difficult because, of course, we have our blog that's also called Consumer Finance Monitor. And every day, there are at least 2 to 3 blog posts. We're a very, very active blog, always have been. And we're covering the hot developments on our blog. So I don't have to look much further than our blog to decide what topic or topics I'd like to cover in the near future. Just to give you one example, a court very recently, the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, came down with an opinion about a month ago, a little over a month ago, saying that the CFPB was unconstitutionally funded. Well, you can just about imagine the interest in that topic, that this agency that's been haranguing our clients, you know, for 11 years, all of a sudden, some court, and it's a high court. Court appeal says that they're gone. And so there's a lot of interest. I decide that's the topic. And I look for, as a guest, one of the leading experts in the country on the constitutional issue that the court dealt with. I mentioned earlier in our podcast the thing that's got me super excited. And this just goes to show you the value of social media. And you never know when something is going to just smack you in the face and say, this is a great opportunity. So one of the goals of our firm is, as most law firms, diversity, equity, and inclusion. And one day I'm on LinkedIn and I see a blog post by a woman who is on the staff of the House Financial Services Committee. And she is indicating that she's about to start create a database of women who want speaking opportunities, but feel that they're not getting enough speaking opportunities, either live presentations, webinars, podcasts, what have you. So immediately a light bulb went off in my mind that I said, wow, this is going to be incredible. I didn't have her email, so I sent her a message on LinkedIn. She responded to me, and she was willing to share her complete database with me, which had over 500 women on the database. And these were not new lawyers. These were very experienced, sophisticated lawyers who could talk on virtually any topic that I wanted to cover. I was describing it to my wife when I learned about this, and I said, I've got a treasure trove of women. She didn't know what I was talking about. But anyway, this just fell in my lap. And we just announced this thing on our blog yesterday. And we are now booked with, we've got probably a dozen women already on that database. And yeah, we record, like you do your podcast show, at any time, but we have a release schedule. And we're now scheduling late into January. So it was always easy to find guests, but it was not so easy to find diverse guests. And now, you know, at least I have been able to, there's no shortage of women who will be able to be guests on our podcast show.
Do you want to start a successful podcast that will generate leads for your law firm? At Good2Be Social, we work with many different law firms and help them to produce and promote their podcasts. Podcasts today are more popular than ever. In fact, today's internet users routinely use podcasts on a monthly, weekly, or even daily basis to stay informed and be entertained. As this medium continues to grow, law firms don't want to fall behind and need to move beyond traditional written content and onto the digital airwaves. Unfortunately, when it comes to podcasting, many legal marketers aren't sure about where to start. With our latest ebook, The Law Firm Guide to Podcasting, readers can learn how to choose a format, a topic, and a name that will get you noticed, how to select and reach out to potential guests, the technology and the recording basis you know to produce a successful show, as well as how to measure the success of your podcast. So hurry now, go to the Good2Be Social website and look for the Law Firm Guide to Podcasting ebook. That is a great, fantastic story. I love it. So Alan, let me ask you, a lot of lawyers that I speak to, and I said, you know, you should be starting a podcast. And they said, well, not really sure that it's, you know, the right thing for me. You know, is it definitely going to generate a business for me? What are your thoughts on that? First of all, has the podcast generated business for you? And are there other benefits to launching a podcast that don't necessarily relate to generating business?
Well, let me put it this way. The podcast, when we organize it, the main purpose was not to generate business. Same thing goes for the blog. Many of our listeners, right from the beginning, were already clients. We launched the podcast as a way to serve clients that were grappling with a very complex and constantly shifting legal landscape in the consumer finance area. The goal here was to provide value beyond legal services. That was a big part of what we do at our law firm to begin with. And our podcast, which, you know, like our blog, was the very first in the firm. That's what we wanted to accomplish. So it's a way for us to, in effect, partner with our clients, already existing clients, and we see the podcast as a way to maintain and continue a dialogue with them. It provides the benefit to them, and of course, provides the benefit to us. It's a really great way to keep the conversation going with our clients. These relationships that were, you know, that get even made stronger through our podcast, because I always, anytime I go out to an industry event, you know, I can't tell you about all the compliments we get about the service that we're providing to the industry. Never do we use the podcast or the blog as a way to generate business. The key thing is to provide value. And here is where I think some law firms are making a mistake. Our podcast was successful because we concentrated in a, as I called it, a niche area. It's no longer such a niche area because once the CFPB got created, every law firm in the country wanted to get into consumer finance. But our firm didn't decide to do just a general podcast at that time. We're focusing on a narrow area where we already know there's a lot of interest because we've got a lot of clients, and I've been practicing in this area for some 40 years. And we're surrounded by my partners who also were very experienced consumer finance lawyers. You mentioned in the intro that I'm a tier one Chambers lawyer, but more important than that, our consumer financial services group has always been ranked in tier one by Chambers. So I think the key, at least to my having success with the podcast, was to narrow the scope of it. You don't want to be all things to everybody. You've got to have a defined audience, and you want an audience that's going to come back. You want repeat business, not in the sense of people coming to you as clients, but you want people to anticipate your podcast. We release a new one every Thursday, like you do. And we have people that download our podcast because they know it's going to be an interesting topic. And that's, I think, the really important thing. You're not trying to generate business. The business will come in if you have a good podcast and if that you show you're knowledgeable and you're erudite and they like your podcast and they like your blog. People will contact you. But that shouldn't be the overarching goal.
I completely, completely agree with everything you said. And I love two points that you made. Number one, and I hear this because I speak to a lot of in-house counsel and clients, and the one thing they always say to me is they're looking for value beyond the transaction, right? Most law firms are competent. Most lawyers are good lawyers. But what is the client getting beyond that immediate transaction? And I think with a podcast, with the information that you're providing, it is a really great, great way to build and demonstrate value. So kudos to you and your team for figuring that out. The other thing you said is, this is what I tell my clients all the time. Creating a podcast is not necessarily about generating new business. Creating a podcast is a great tool to either enhance your existing relationships or create new relationships. Because who doesn't want to be invited to come on the podcast and talk about your knowledge and talk about your experience? So whether it's someone that you have a relationship with and you want to expand it, or perhaps someone new that you've never met before, you know, it's a really nice way to get relationships going. And I agree, business will come down the road, but that's not the main reason why you should be starting a podcast.
That's absolutely right. It's about value and thought leadership. And, you know, you've got to be patient. You can't expect to start a podcast and overnight it's going to be an immediate success. I mean, we were maybe more fortunate than a lot of law firms starting podcasts because we already had a very large built-in audience as the result of our webinars and the result of the blog that we maintained.
Let me ask you one last question. So, you just said you guys were lucky. You had a built-in audience. You were doing a lot of webinars. But for the lawyer out there who is just starting a podcast and perhaps doesn't really have a great following to begin with, you know, what are some of the things you're doing to promote your podcast that other lawyers could mimic or learn from?
Well, when we do a podcast, there's an article about it on our blog that gets published every Thursday, but before the podcast gets released. So that's number one. Number two, it goes on our firm's social media. So our firm sends something out on LinkedIn. They send something out on Twitter. And then I will typically, and I'll tell the people in my group, not just to like whatever the LinkedIn post is or the Twitter post, but to say something that is additive, something that you think will be of interest to the people on the LinkedIn page. And of course, share the LinkedIn post and the Twitter post with your followers on social media. You know, that's the other thing that I have found, Guy, and surprisingly, that the younger lawyers are not quite so active on LinkedIn and Twitter as they should be. Again, it's so easy. It's such an easy way to develop contacts and to network. And a lot of people are just, I think, missing the boat there. But we do publicize, you know, what we're going to be doing. And we don't send out an alert to our vast mailing list. We don't do that. But, you know, we get the word out there. It's on all available on all platforms. So, you know, that's key. And we monitor the platforms. We look to see how many people liked it, to see how many comments, you know, we've gotten. And we take the comments to heart. We look for suggestions. I'm always at the end of every podcast, tell people, if you have any ideas for topics for our show or guest speakers, even including yourself, don't be bashful. Reach out to us. How you reach us, and we'll certainly consider, you know, what we hear from you. It's the conversation. It's not a monologue. That's another key. It's got to be conversation with your audience.
Completely agree. I love it. All right, Alan. Well, unfortunately, we are running out of time. But before I let you go, what is maybe a little bit of advice you might have for a lawyer or a firm that's thinking about starting a podcast, but, you know, not really sure how to go about it?
All right, this is what I would do. Whether it's a big or a small, medium or small firm, I would first look at the practice areas in your firm. And then I would see what's already been done. I would tend to think smaller practice areas, niche practice areas, where there isn't so much competition. You know, we've got maybe in my area, maybe one other podcast show that's being done by a law firm that they just started up, but they're, you know, pretty far behind the eight ball. So I think you want to see where's the competition. And the smaller the practice group, look at it, look for a successful practice group with a proven track record. And probably, you know, it'll be one of the practice groups in your firm that has been successful year after year. And then focus on that. That's how I would get my foot in the door. What I wouldn't do is start a podcast and basically cover every legal topic under the sun. I just don't think, you know, that that's going to really catch on. There's too much competition. There are too many people already doing it. But again, there's no right or wrong way, you know, for a law firm to establish a podcast. You've got to take a close look at your firm, look at it in the mirror, and analyze where are your strengths. And where is there less competition? That would be my advice.
That is fantastic advice, Alan. Thank you so much for your time today, for sharing your knowledge, for sharing your experiences, and for really educating our audience on, you know, the great success that you've had with both your blog and your podcast. To our audience, thank you for listening today. If you enjoyed today's episode, please make sure you go to goodtobesocial.com/podcast. You can subscribe there so you don't miss any future episodes. You can also listen to some of our great past podcasts. Alan, again, thank you for your time. Yep. It was really a pleasure having you. And, you know, we wish you continued success.
Yes. Well, Guy, I want to thank you for having me as your guest. Usually the shoes are on different feet. I'm usually a host, and I really enjoyed for once being a guest on a podcast show, and very much enjoyed my conversation with you today. And I hope your listeners thought it was of value.
I am sure they did. And I am glad that you got to be the guest, and you were a fantastic guest. All right, everyone. Thanks. Thank you so much. And we'll see you next time. Thank you.